Today's reading is 1 John, or John, chapter 1, verses 9 through 13. John, chapter 1, 9 through 13. There was a light, which gives light to every man coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own did not receive him. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, to those who believed in his name, who were born not of blood, nor the will of the flesh, nor the will of man, but of God.
Good morning, and good day, and good week, and good month, and good new year, and hopefully it will be an exciting year, like Bill described. I know for my family, we have lots of exciting things looking for us in this coming year, looking for a new little Williams, because the world needs one more Williams in it, and we're hoping for that this summer. That'll be exciting. And for the first time in a long time, I'm looking, and I can see the light at the end of the tunnel of a graduate program I entered into a few years ago. When I entered it, I really thought it was going to be a pretty short-term, easy project. And apparently that was the sales pitch. But the reality of the program was a little more than I had bargained for. But this coming spring semester is the last semester I actually have to drive to Edmond. I'll take 1 week long intensive in May, and then in the fall, all I have are, I have an independent study and a project I have to do independently. I don't even have to go to Edmond anymore. By the end of that, I'll be finished. If they pass me, it'll be exciting. So, looking forward to all that, and I hope, your year looks bright as well. I think, if I remember correctly, that, this time last year, we began 2014, with a look at some sermons from the Gospel of John. I know you all remember that, of course. It's etched into your memory. I like to start with John. I'm beginning to think it would be a good habit, actually. Just every year you're going to start to expect this from me, that we're going to start the new year with something from the Gospel of John. So it's a neat place to start for me. It has lots of beginning language in it, which makes it handy for our purposes. And I want to do that again this morning. John's Gospel presents a problem to us if you're a commentator or a Bible student trying to understand the Gospel accounts. You read Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and they sound kind of the same. You know, Luke's a little different than Mark, and Mark's a little different than Matthew, but they sound like they're at least talking about the same person. It has kind of the same sense of the story and move along, and you can see where, okay, Luke's doing this and Matthew's doing that, and they kind of line up, and it's nice. What the commentators describe when they get to John is what's sometimes called the synoptic problem. And what they mean by that, that's just a fancy term to describe the fact that Matthew, Mark, and Luke seem to kind of have the same vision of Jesus, the same basic picture. And then John just kind of goes off in his own direction. And you start in John 1 and you think, where are we and what has happened? Is this a gospel? Is this the same kind of story about the same kind of person? And some people are very daunted by that. The easy answer, and of course, I get to fill 30 minutes, so I'm not going to give you the easy answer, but the easy answer to that question about why is John different than Matthew is actually easier than you might think, and it's because John is John. You might as well ask, why is Keith different than Bill? Because Keith's Keith and Bill's Bill, right? I mean, I don't have to explain it any further than that. If you read an essay that I wrote and an essay that Jesse wrote, they would not sound identical, even if they were on the same topic. Well, didn't you get the same prompt? Yeah, but Jesse's Jesse and Ben's Ben, and they don't sound the same. And so it turns out, why does John sound different than Luke? Because John isn't Luke. That's the simple answer, and that's enough for me, but some people, want a little more. And so, once upon a time, I was reading a book on the parables, written by a guy named Robert Capon. And Capon happened upon this particular question when he was writing about parables. Because if you're studying the parables, this problem becomes very large. How many parables are in the Gospel of John? Think real hard. The answer is zero. So in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, parable after parable after parable after parable after parable, and then John feels compelled to tell us zero parables. Well, how come? Who is a Jesus who doesn't tell parables? How do you even tell that story? John doesn't. And so Kappen was very interested in this and made this statement that kind of launched this sermon. He says, John omits a number of important events in Jesus' life, but he deals with their import or ramifications in other ways and context. Accordingly, my own disposition when I find something missing from John is to look for the place or places where he works it in under another guise. Now, that was a really savvy observation. What he's really saying is, don't assume just because the exact same thing doesn't happen in John that John's not going to make that point somewhere. Quite often, John will bring something to your attention. It's the same point Matthew's making. John just makes it through a different set of material. And so what I want to do starting this morning and then Sundays throughout the month of January, basically, the next 3 weeks after this one, I've got four sermons where I want to look at John, but I don't want to just look at John. I want to compare John and Matthew. I could have picked Mark and I could have picked Luke, but I picked Matthew because I can. So John and Matthew, and I want to compare especially their early chapters. And what I'm trying to figure out is, what is the point? Because if I get both sets, then I should see if Kappen's right, and by the way, he is, that's the punchline, I should see Matthew's points in John's stories and John's points in Matthew's stories. I should see them talking, we're talking about the same person. They're doing it through different stories and different ways and different details, but what I'm curious is, what would happen if I kind of laid them on top of each other and instead of being so bothered by the fact that they're a little different, asked what are the same points that they're making? And the point that comes to me over and over again that I want to emphasize this morning is that God's light is coming into the world. Both John and Matthew want to make that point. John's going to make it louder because John's John. But both of them want to make a point about God's light coming into the world in the person of Jesus Christ. So let's take a look. We're going to start in John. And if you want to be with it this morning, what you're going to want to do is going to be really complicated. You're going to take two fingers. One of them is going to be in John chapter 1, one of them is going to be in Matthew chapter 1, and you're going to flip, okay? And I'm going to try to do that and see if I can not drop my Bible as we go. But if you can accomplish that, the two-finger exercise from Matthew to John, we'll be really on top of things this morning. So we start with, we're looking at the story of Jesus, we want to ask the question, okay, where does the story of Jesus begin? What's the starting place? Could Matthew and John at least agree on that? And the answer is, well, no, not exactly. Both of them begin in the beginning, but their beginnings are very different. So here's the beginning in John chapter 1, verses 1 through 5. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. In the beginning was the Word. So we start at the beginning, but where does John want to put the peg for the beginning? He says, well, the beginning, as far back as you can go. He's robbing language from Genesis, isn't he? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and John says, in the beginning was the Word. This is the Word who was God and was with God. He was making things. If it has been made, I love that language in John. He created everything. If it was created, He's the one who created it. So, fair enough. If you can find something that was not created, then jury's still out on that one. But everything that was created in the beginning, this person called the Word was part of that and was an acting agent in it. So John says, here's, if you want to tell the story of Jesus right, you got to start at the beginning. And really, that beginning is the beginning of everything. Now, Matthew also has a beginning, but it reads a little differently. If you flip over to Matthew chapter 2, or actually, we're going to skip chapter 1. But Matthew chapter 2 and verse 1, listen to his beginning. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem. That's a very different starting place, isn't it? John wants us to reach back beyond time and space into the infinite relationship of God with himself. We want to talk about God in the beginning of creation. Matthew says, well, there's a place on a map called Bethlehem. Look at the difference, okay? God creating all places. Matthew says, this one place. God creating all of time in the days of Herod the king. Matthew is interested in how this great big cosmic story comes about in one little scene, in one little town, at one little point of time. And the gospel story is both, isn't it? That it's not one or the other. You're not supposed to pick, well, I like John's better, or I like Matthew's better. That the gospel story is both of those. It is, on the one hand, this grand and beautiful narrative bigger than the universe itself and older than our oldest beginning. At the same time, it's a story that starts with one pregnant, frightened woman in one small backwater town in the reign of one petty tyrant, in the reign of one world empire that was mostly just interested in collecting taxes that day. From as small as it gets to as big as it gets, both of them want to tell us about the same story, just on different scales. John's beginning calls us to look at the grand picture of God's light breaking into the world. But Matthew's beginning tells us to remember that God's light took the form of a child born in Bethlehem and laid in a trough. And it's that intimacy that I really think you've got to have to make sense of the gospel story, that you've got to have both. Richard Feynman was one of the 20th century's most outspoken and famous physicists. And when he talked about religion, he said, the thing I don't like about Christianity is it's just too small. That it's, I look at the universe and see how big it is, and Christianity tells me that the most important thing that ever happened in a town in the Middle East 2,000 years ago. And it's just too small for a universe this big. And for him, I'd like to say, you really ought to read John. Because John's feeling it. John understands your question and wants to show you the bigger picture. I think other people have a different question, that they look at the gospel and they say it's just too big. God wants to save humanity. God wants to do big, wonder-working power, writing amazing things. But I'm just a guy who lives in Glenpool, and here are my problems, and here are my issues, and what has that got to do with me? And to you, I'd say you need to read Matthew. Because Matthew's telling you about the same person, but just on a smaller scale. That his life was a lot like your life. Bethlehem could have been Glenpool. I mean, it's just that kind of place. And you really start to see the connection on those different levels. Well, what about this light that's breaking into the world? God is going to call our attention to this light. Because if it's God's light, the God of all creation, shining in the world of darkness, we ought to be able to see it. God wants to make sure we can see it, and so he calls our attention to it. How does he do it? Matthew and John are both going to show you God pointing at his light, Jesus of Nazareth, but in different ways. In John's gospel, he calls attention to a particular messenger who lived to bear witness of that light. In John chapter 1, verses 6 through 8, it says, there was a man sent from God, whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. What is John telling us? There was a person whose name was John, and his life's work was to point a big neon arrow at the light of God and make sure nobody missed it. Well, in Matthew's gospel, you don't get John at this point in the story. You do in chapter 3, but we're not there yet. We're in chapter 2. What does Matthew show us? Matthew shows us God pointing to the light in different ways. If you flip back to Matthew, for example, Matthew chapter 2 again, verses 1 and 2, how after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. By the by, this to me is one of the great unsolved mysteries of the Bible is about the wise men. They are fascinating to me. I want to know more. And Matthew has no interest in telling me more, but I would like to know more. Sometimes we call it magi or wise men. We know they're from the east. You want to know what's east of Israel? Everything. I mean, if you go far enough, east doesn't help us a whole lot. The world's round. You can keep going east and end up on the west side. There's really no telling what east means, but probably east are those lands that are traditionally understood of east of Israel and Judea, places like Babylon with old-sounding names and old-sounding peoples and ancient scholars from years gone by. And for some inexplicable reason, these guys were doing what I wish every one of us was doing, which is looking for God to point to His Son. And they were waiting quite literally. I mean, they were apparently looking at the sky. How come? Text gives you no explanation. Want to hear my totally unreliable and unverifiable theory? I feel like I should even step out of the pulpit. That's sketchy. I mean, if you're making up answers, east of Judea is Babylon. And if you read the book of Daniel, Daniel, at the end of that book, was made the head of an order of people known as the wise men of Babylon. Now this is 500 years prior to what you're reading in Matthew's account. But the sages and the wise men, the satraps, the educated of Babylon were in kind of an order of educated, sophisticated people. And Daniel, a Jewish young man, later a Jewish old man, was made the head of that particular order. And then out of nowhere, 500 years later, people from that part of the world come to Daniel's part of the world looking for Daniel's Messiah, saying, well, we saw a star in the sky. And we don't even know why they were looking. I like to think, in totally unverifiable, meaningless speculation, that maybe, strangely, the life of Daniel had planted a seed in those people's minds that had been passed down in their wisdom and scholarship for centuries, that they were looking for something to come out of Judea, and they kind of felt like they'd know it when they saw it. And something about that star, and something about something they knew from somewhere, how's that for vague? Something about something they knew from somewhere, called their attention and said, that's it. That's the thing we've been looking for. And so they went to once the land of Daniel, where he was estranged and exiled from into Babylon. The Old Testament is the story of Israel going into Babylon. The New Testament begins with Babylon coming back to Israel and looking for the Messiah, the Son of God. Could be something completely different. So that's just a possibility. But whatever it is, there are wise men and they're following this light all the way to Israel. And furthermore, when they arrive there, it turns out that there was something else that should have been pointing to Bethlehem all along. And that's in verses 3 through 6. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief, by the way, that means that they were as confused by the wise men as we are. The whole city of Jerusalem says, wait, what? You were staring at the sky, you saw a star, and you came here for a king? They're not sure about me. But so they go look. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, Jewish wise men, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. And they told him, in Bethlehem of Judea. Well, how did they know that? Were they looking at stars? No. For so it is written by the prophet. But you, O Bethlehem in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Coming from Micah chapter 5 and verse 2. So an interesting little thing there that Herod wasn't looking until somebody told him to look. The wise men came and brought his attention to it. But when he arrived and began to look, what does he see? His own scribes said, well, I guess we should be looking in Bethlehem because that's the place the prophets had told us to look. So both Matthew and John tell us that God in many ways points us to the true light. I think the question for us today is, what pointers are you overlooking? And here I'm not necessarily talking about stars. I don't think you get out your telescope and look and you see a big cross in the sky and it tells you, no, that's not what I'm after. But in your life, there are a lot of things that God has built into this world and the people you interact with on a regular basis that I believe point you to your Son. I think it is hard to ignore the Son of God. I think it takes some effort to look past all the things God has built into this world, whether it be His church, whether it be His gospel, whether it be the voice of all creation. Everything is pointing you to His Son, Jesus Christ, and we work hard to ignore it. We surround our people, ourselves with people who talk about other things. We fill our lives with other activities. We fill our career with every incentive to do everything we possibly can to run the opposite direction, because we don't want to see that light maybe any more than Herod did. And as a result, we look the other direction. But the fair question is, how many things do you have to overlook to look past Jesus and the life that you're living today and in His church? Furthermore, what would happen when this light comes into the world? Would the world see it? I believe that the answer is yes and no, and that comes to us from Matthew and John again. John tells us that the light was appearing to the whole world in John 1:9, and Matthew, sure enough, shows us not Jewish wise men, but Gentiles, which is interesting, because Matthew, you remember, is the gospel to the Jewish people. And yet, his first grand, big story about Jesus is not about Jewish people receiving their king, but about Gentiles coming from some far-off, strange place, and they see the light before anybody else does. In fact, not only that, the people that should have seen it first look right over it. Not only do they look over it, they look back a second time and see it with devious intent. John chapter 1, 10 and 11 says, His own would not receive Him. And Matthew tells us the story of the powerful people of Judea rejecting the young child Jesus. And Matthew chapter 2, 12 through 18, a story you probably know. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they, the wise men, departed to their own country by another way. Now when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, Rise, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him. And he rose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. This was fulfilled what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son. Then Herod, when he saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, became furious. And he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem and in all the region who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had ascertained from the wise men. Then was fulfilled the word spoken by the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, weeping and loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be comforted because they are no more. Look at that sad story. The king of Israel has arrived in Bethlehem. The star came and said he's here. The books came and said he's here. Everything said he's here. And what did his own people do? The rulers of his own land said, let's kill him. And so the first thing the young child has to do is go somewhere else. What a strange, strange story. Again, it's the Old Testament backwards. What's the story of Exodus? The story of Exodus are the people of Israel trapped in slavery and in danger for their very life, the young children being murdered in what land? In the land of Egypt. Young children being murdered in the land of Egypt. And so God brings them out from Pharaoh and leads them into the land that would eventually be given to them, the land of Israel. How does the New Testament start? Same story. People being oppressed by a cruel tyrant, young children being murdered, but the place of safety, they have to go back to Egypt. Completely in reverse. What a strange tale. But this is the story of God's light breaking into the world. And what it reminds us is God's light is bright. God's light is beautiful. But just like I said on the last slide, if you don't want to see it, you don't have to. You can look the other way. In fact, you can look right at it. Instead of falling in love with it, you can hate it. You can fear what it might do to your life and how it might require you to be a different and better person. You can be afraid of what it means to acknowledge that someone else is king. Because every one of us, deep down in the core of our human heart, you look really hard, you'll find Herod. Herod who wants to be king and does not want to share. Every one of us wants to control our own destiny. Every one of us wants to make our own choices. Every one of us wants to be answerable to no one. Every one of us would kill to keep it so. The choice we have with Jesus is whether to do that or not. Whether to see the light of God and throw Herod out and accept the true king, or like Herod, to find every excuse possible to throw out the rightful king of our hearts and of Israel. Finally, this morning, the last question to ask is, what would become of this light? Obviously, this is just chapter 1 of John and chapter 2 of Matthew. We got lots of gospel to go, but can we get a hint of what's going to happen in the story of God's light breaking into the world? Matthew tells us that this light would survive the schemes of Herod to grow in a backwater town called Nazareth. Now, if Bethlehem is Glenfield, Nazareth is like Creek County. Maybe. Can I tell, is it too early in the year for Kiefer jokes? I don't know what to compare. Nazareth is backwater. I mean, it was a slur. I mean, just to say, yeah, he's from Nazareth, what does he know? It was a really shady thing to say about somebody. It wasn't very nice. And that's exactly where Jesus grows up. He grows up in this crummy backwater town, but he survives. The people who should have embraced him tried to kill him, but he survives. His own people rejected him, but he survives. And in John's gospel, that's where we meet him. John, in John chapter 1, has this to say, speaking from his own perspective now. John chapter 1, 14 through 18. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen His glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness about Him and cried out, "This was He of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks before me, because He was before me.' And from His fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, the only God, who is at the Father's side. He has made Him known." Jesus is the light of the world in the sense that He has made all of this possible, that He has made all things. He has brought God's glory into the world, and all of our knowledge of God now comes through Him. I hope the year to come is a beautiful year, lit with all kinds of blessings and wonderful things. What the Bible demands that we recognize is that every good that can ever be comes from this person who was before all things and yet was born in Bethlehem, who is bigger than all things and yet was laid in a feed trough in a stable. This is the person we must come to know if we want to have a life worth living, if we want the light of God to shine in us. And from His fullness we have all received grace upon grace. If you would turn to Him and find His grace and faith and baptism, this is the time and place to begin that life. As we stand and sing, won't you come at this time?